Well, if you turn to the book of Ruth, we'll be at the right place. We began this study. This is an event that took place during the time of the judges. As it tells us in the first verse, the time element has not varied any, and the conditions that existed nationwise, from the days of the book of Judges, when they were doing evil in the sight of the Lord and worshiping idols and not having God's blessings come upon them, you can see how it affected individual households too. So this is a household that made a bad decision during that period of time. Rather than to call upon God and to pray for God's direction in this time of trouble, he took his life into his own hands. And that's a very common thing, because we think, this is my life and I've got to do what I think is best. And sometimes we just leave out bringing God into the picture, like he needs to be first. And we say, well, I've got to do this. So we go ahead and do it. Well, that's where this family, that's the track they got on, because of circumstantial troubles. We have to be careful about circumstantial troubles, because they have a way of interrupting our lives. Circumstantial troubles can interrupt marriages. They can interrupt the flow of things in the home. And certainly they can also interrupt our relationship and our fellowship with the Lord if we're not really careful that it doesn't happen. So God says in Ephesians 5:17 that we have got to prove what is acceptable unto the Lord. And not just go ahead and then do something and then pray that it'll work out. That's not it. Oftentimes we have our plans made up, and then as we have our plans made up, then we start praying that God will bless our plans, that God will do what we want him to do and help us in our own enterprise. Now, the story of Ruth is a story of how grace can overcome in spite of human failure. Because Elimelech and his family got out of the will of God, but there was enough association with them that Ruth had, that she picked up on the true God of Israel. I'm sure that they probably did not stop everything in their life as far as their thoughts about God, maybe their prayers and so on. So there was enough testimony for Ruth to come to know the Lord herself, but there was total failure on their part to abide in God's will. And so there was a high price that they paid. But Ruth's conversion is a testimony of God's grace, what God can do in spite of human failure. Now, I say that because Ruth in no way justifies Elimelech's decision to leave Israel. It doesn't justify it, but it does testify to the fact of God's grace greater than our sin. I've had people tell me, well, if I wouldn't have done this, which was contrary to God, then this good thing would not have happened. And using that as a justification for what they did. No, you cannot do that. I've heard people say, well, if I would not have committed adultery, this child would not have been born, and this child is a gift from God. So they want to use that as a justification for their adultery. No. The adultery is still adultery, but the child is different. It's God's gift, and it's in spite of that. So just hopefully that can be a part of our thinking process about this study, that Ruth's conversion and the part that she played, she was a part in the ancestry of Joseph, who was the legal father of Christ also. So she was brought in by grace, but it's a testimony of the greatness of God's grace. So this lesson has two parts to it. It has the part of the failure on the part of God's people and reaping a better harvest for what they had sown. It also has the greatness of God's grace and the power of regeneration, the power of true faith. You can see that in Ruth, true childlike faith and how powerful that is. But the first part of it is Elimelech. So we get into verse 1. It says, it came to pass in the days when the judges ruled that there was a famine in the land. Now we know why, because of study of the book of Judges, they did evil in the sight of the Lord, and then this happened, and the curses of disobedience came upon them, like Deuteronomy the 28th chapter said it would. So they're experiencing that now in Israel. And it says, a certain man of Bethlehem, Judah, went to, and notice the word sojourn. In his mind, I'm just going to go there for a little bit, and then when things get better, I'll come back. Well, that's one of the ways that the devil can tempt us. He can say, well, this is just a little thing, you know, this is not the major, and so just go ahead with this. Well, it didn't turn out that way, because he sojourned in the country, but in the latter part of verse 2, he continued there. So once we get in a position where we should not be, it's a whole lot harder to back out. It's kind of like if you are gung-ho and you get you a four-wheel drive vehicle and you say, well, I'm going to get into this mud hole and I'm going to go right on through it. You might get in the mud hole, but you may not get out. So it's a whole lot harder to get out of something than it is to get into it. That's a poor example, I know. But anyway, verse 2, the name of the man was Elimelech, the name of his wife Naomi, the name of his two sons Mahlon and Chilion, Ephrathites of Bethlehem, Judah, and they came into the country of Moab and continued. So we can see that years went by. So it says in verse 3 that Elimelech, Naomi's husband, died. She was left and her two sons. They took them wives of the women of Moab. The name of the one was Orpah, the name of the other Ruth, and they dwelled there about 10 years, and then the sons died. So let's just go back and kind of recap on that a little bit. They're experiencing famine in the land. That means that they should have been calling upon God rather than making plans elsewhere, but they were not. They were thinking, well, circumstances dictate, you know, so this is the way we got to go, this is what we got to do, and we don't want to hear anything else. So they failed to seek the Lord. They failed to walk by faith. Now, those are majors. I mean, that's not just a minor discrepancy. When we fail to seek God and we fail to walk by faith. So we must be careful, as I've said, not to let circumstances take over, because circumstances are mighty powerful. We know they dictate to our flesh, but God says we are to stop, and 2 Corinthians 5:7 says we're to walk by faith and not by sight. So they left the promised land, they left the land of Canaan, and that meant they left the house of God. They were no longer there to worship in God's house. So that's a biggie. And the other one is Deuteronomy 23:3, they were to remain separate from the Moabites. They were not to go to the Moabites. The Moabites were a heathen, idolatrous people who were opposed to Israel. They were not Israel's friend at all. So they went contrary to God's will, and they went to the world. And of course, that's where the devil likes to point all of us at some point in our life, that when we're not really prospering as a Christian, when we're not really being blessed as a Christian, then he wants us to look at the world and say, well, maybe you ought to do this, maybe you ought to do that, and turn to the world for your answers. And that, of course, is just one of the common ways that the devil works out of his playbook. Well, their intentions, as we pointed out in verse 2, was just to sojourn, but their intentions were defeated. Because once they got there, things were different than what they had anticipated. And they found that they were no longer in control of what they had intended to do. Things can change overnight in our way of thinking if we're just looking at situations and circumstances. What was a bright sunny day yesterday may be a dark cloudy day today. So we have to be careful that we're not letting circumstances give us our view. And so they lost control because they had yielded to circumstances rather than exercise their faith. So we can just put it this way, that when anybody takes the liberty to step aside from God's will, then they're stepping out of God's care. And when you step out of God's care, guess who's there? 1 Peter 5:8. The devil, as a roaring lion walking about seeking whom he may devour. We have to have God's care to prevent that from happening to us. Well, they didn't return, and they stayed. And so now you find something that's very much taught in the Bible, and that is that when a person does not respond to God's will and they're God's child, there is a sin unto death in 1 John chapter 5 and verse 16. And of course, God doesn't just strike us down immediately, but here's a period of 10 years have gone by, and there's been no concern to go back to God's will again. So 1 John 5:16 tells us there is a sin unto death. If a person doesn't respond to God, God will take him home. And so he died a premature death. Hebrews 2:3 says of God's children, "How shall we escape if we neglect so great salvation?" There is no escaping God. We cannot just turn God on like a light switch as long as we want him on, and then turn him off when we don't want him to be a factor of our life anymore. There's no way to do that, because if you're God's child, you're God's child. And Hebrews 12 says, "He chastens every son whom he receives." 1 Corinthians chapter 6, verses 19 and 20 also says, "We are God's purchased possession." And so therefore, we have got to glorify God. And if we're not doing that, we are going against what belongs to God. God has purchased us to live a life for him, for our good, for our benefit. And if we don't do that, why, then we're going against God's purpose, who owns us. And of course, there are repercussions. Hebrews chapter 10 and verse 26 and 27 tells us that there's no escape from that, because God does judge his children in this life. So the first one to die was Elimelech. He was the head of the household. He was responsible. He did not take it upon himself to do what he should have done. Then, when it now becomes the sons, they have their lives. They're in charge now. They don't have a spiritual head above them on earth. Well, they also died, as you see in verse 5. And so Naomi is left with just her two daughters-in-law at this time. Well, I think that probably Mahlon and Chilion had been greatly influenced by the reasoning of their father. He probably offered a reasoning to them when he left the land of Israel, and being under him, maybe young at the time, they just accepted, well, this is it, because that's what dad believes. And then they got down in Moab, and probably Elimelech had some reasoning for continuing there, and they probably bought into that too. So here is influence, and the part that it played in their life. The faithlessness of someone seems to carry a whole lot more weight sometimes than a person who does, because of its effect upon the fleshly thinking. So they chose not to return to the Lord and to return to Israel. So I want to put this with it. There is no wisdom in following those who are not following God. And sometimes people do that. I know I've seen it a number of times where that a husband or a wife will follow their spouse in their departing from the service of God. There is no wisdom in that. None whatsoever. Someone pointed me to a book one time that had been written, which I know why those things are written, and it was about a woman's place being subject to her husband, but it carried it to this extreme that if he does something wrong and she follows him in good faith of God's will for her life to follow him, then it'll all fall on him and not on her. Well, that person needs to read Acts chapter 5, because Ananias did wrong. Sapphira knew it was wrong. She followed him, and the judgment came on her the same. And of course, God says that when it comes to a woman being in subjection to their husbands in the Lord, not in the devil. So our point of being subject to authority is if it's in the Lord. And we're not to follow anything that is contrary to God's will, because that'll just get us in trouble, the same as it is a person who would be leading. So there's only one left now, Naomi. Well, she decides, I'm going home. And of course, I'm sure that was quite a situation for her, because she now has no husband, her sons are dead, and all she has are her two sad, grieving daughter-in-laws. Her life is empty, and her life is now vain apart from God's plan and God's purpose. So verse 6, she arose with her daughters-in-law that she might return from the country of Moab, for she had heard in the country of Moab how that the Lord had visited his people in giving them bread. So one of the cycles where that Israel turned back to God, God sent a judge in, God delivered him, God started blessing him. So now she's seeing that end. And she decides, well, I should go home now, because the Lord has, began to bless again. Well, she should have had her hope in God the whole time, because God can take care of an individual in spite of perhaps the failures of others. But wherever you have things that are being talked about and things are being accepted that are not the way they are with the Bible, this then leads to further faithless thinking and further, you might say, spiritually bankrupt conclusions. And so now she has reaped the harvest of that. It can even come to a point like you see in the book of Malachi, the 3rd chapter. It's a vain thing to serve God. What profit is it that we have walked before the Lord mournfully? That's how bad thinking can get when an individual starts out on a pathway of not making decisions by faith. It just snowballs. In the 19th verse, thinking about Naomi, it says, they too went and they came to Bethlehem, and it came to pass when they were come to Bethlehem that all the city was moved about them, and they said, is this Naomi? You know, things are now totally different. You can imagine the toll that the years of losing everything she had has taken on her. They probably had to look real hard to really recognize her because of the grief and everything that she was, that it would have upon her. So it was hard for them to believe, is this really Naomi? The person that we knew before? So let's just think about going to the world. You know, the world has its commercials. That is, boy, you know, we do this, we do that, and if you live that and do what we want you to do, like the devil told Christ, well, all these things I'll give you if you'll fall down and worship me. If you're going to look at what the world does for people, look at what the world's doing for all people. And you will find that there are masses of people all over the world that are just starving, that are just destitute, and have no hope whatsoever. So don't look at the commercials. Look at what the world does, turning to the world, what the devil does for all the world, and you'll find it's a broad road to destruction. It is not that glamorous life that you might see advertised. I recall years ago when I was growing up, it was the Marlboro Man, you know. And he was strong, he was handsome. Well, you need to look to the end of where he wound up. And it wasn't a good end. But look at the overall picture of the world rather than just at the commercials. And you don't have to go far off country, just drive through any town and you'll find there's evidence of people, if they don't really know the Lord, their lives are in trouble. Things are not going well for them. So Naomi had a confession. She said unto them, "Call me not Naomi, call me Mara, for the Almighty hath dealt very bitterly with me. I went out full, and the Lord hath brought me home again empty. Why then call ye me Naomi, seeing the Lord hath testified against me, and the Almighty hath afflicted me?" So, number one, God has judged us. God has judged me. And he does judge his people without question. And so if we can better ourselves by not serving God, then the whole Bible is a lie. So don't think that there's any path forward for you that's better than what you read in the Bible, because that means God's a liar then. If there's a path better for me in life than there is in serving God. Another thing about this confession, I went out full. That meant they didn't have to leave Israel. It wasn't because they were starving. It wasn't because they could not make a living. But it means that they were just uprooted due to their faithless dissatisfaction. That's what happened. It wasn't because they had a need. They just got dissatisfied, and nothing about Israel looked good anymore. Probably all the towns looked like trash to them and all this, that, and the other. You know how it goes. Like when somebody gets turned against the church, why, everything about the church, oh, that's terrible. So those feelings of dissatisfaction that come from a lack of faith, that's what brought them to Moab. It wasn't the fact that they were starving and had to go there on their own. So God judges his people in this life in 1 Corinthians 11, verses 30 through 32, to where that we don't get punished with the lost afterwards. You know, if people would just read their Bible, they would know that you don't get lost after you're saved. Because God judges his people in this life so that we're not punished with the lost in the life to come. I want to read that in 1 Corinthians 11. It's surprising to me how that this matter of being redeemed eternally by the blood of Christ cannot be seen. But in 1 Corinthians 11, 30, "For this cause many are weak and sickly among you, and many sleep. For if we would judge ourselves, we should not be judged. But when we are judged, we are chastened of the Lord, that we should not be condemned with the world." God does not condemn those whom Christ has justified, but he punishes us even to the point of taking our life prematurely if we don't respond. So that's what had happened to this household. And there was only one out of the four left now, and that's Naomi. She comes back in verse 22. Ruth is with her, and we're going to get to Ruth in a moment here. But she comes back in the beginning of the barley harvest, but she has nothing to harvest. She hasn't sown anything. You see, she's been in Moab, so she comes back to empty fields. I'm sure her inheritance was still there, because otherwise she couldn't have come back to it. But nothing to harvest. She has no harvest because there had been no sowing, many, many wasted years. Now, in verse 7, backing up now, it says, "Wherefore she went forth out of the place where she was, and her two daughters-in-law with her. They went on the way to return into the land of Judah. And Naomi said unto her two daughters-in-law, Go return each to her mother's house. The Lord deal kindly with you as ye have dealt with the dead and with me. The Lord grant you that ye may find rest, each of you, in the house of her husband. Then she kissed them, and they lifted up their voice and wept. They said unto her, Surely we will return with thee unto thy people. Naomi said, Turn again, my daughters, why will ye go with me? Are there yet any more sons in my womb, that they may be your husbands? Turn again, my daughters, go your way, for I am too old to have an husband. If I should say I have hope, if I should have a husband also tonight, and should also bear sons, would ye tarry for them till they were grown? Would ye stay for them from having husbands? Nay, my daughters, for it grieveth me much for your sakes that the hand of the Lord is gone out against me. And they lifted up their voice and wept again, and Orpha kissed her mother-in-law, but Ruth clave unto her." Well, where's Naomi's thinking? Naomi's thinking is not, I have an opportunity to bring these two women back to where they can know the Lord and serve the Lord. Her thinking is all about herself and about her sad situation. Definitely their lives had been greatly touched. You see in the latter part of verse 13, the hand of the Lord is gone out against me. So her confession of faith, or just thinking about Naomi now, where she's at, and we'll get to Ruth's confession of faith in a moment. Naomi's thinking spiritually is about zero. She's not really thinking much at all about the future spiritually. She had not grown a bit for the years she had been in Moab. As a matter of fact, she probably lost a lot of her thinking, as it should have been. Her spiritual vision was now dull. It was dim. She wasn't rejoicing in the Lord. She wasn't rejoicing in the will of God. Other interests had commanded the way she felt and thought. She's only thinking in the flesh now. All she has in her thoughts about God is sorrow and regret. The Lord has dealt heavily with me. There's no blessings. There's no fruit of the Spirit. There's no victories of faith. So that's all she had to look at. You know, Proverbs 14:14 says that the backslider in heart shall be filled with his own ways. So a person can come to the point where all they have is minus. They don't have any plus when it comes to spiritual things. That's where she was at. She closed the door on Orpha's interest in Israel. Think about it. In her grief-stricken mind, feeling sorry for herself as she was, why, she encouraged her daughters-in-law to go back to Moab. She's not thinking spiritually about this at all, because she should have wanted them to come and be with the Lord. So she closed the door on Orpha's interest. She was, of course, being used of the devil in her poor thinking to leave the impression Ruth and Orpha, you'd be better off staying here. Your opportunities in life are better off for you here than they would be in Israel. That's sad. Well, she's an example of how poor attitudes turn others off toward the church. I want you to think a little bit about it. Our church has been here over 50 years. Over those 50 years, there's been people come and go. And most of the time when they go, they don't go out praising the church. They'll go out with some negative thought about it. Then there's the world on the outside that does not like a Bible-preaching church to start with. And, of course, the devil raises all kinds of accusations and stories about the church that are not true. And you've heard me say that, and I think I know who this person was because I had a confrontation with him one time. Raised the story, it went all through town, that in order to come to this church, you have to show the preacher your W-2 statement because he requires 10% of your income. And I know I was mentioning that to the funeral director. We were on our way to the cemetery one day, and we were just talking about stories, and he said, well, is that true? I said, no, it's not true. So I knew he had heard it. And so you get all those stories out. You get the negative attitudes of people who have left church, and it's this way. If something bad happens in the church, before the afternoon's over, everybody in the community will know about it. But if somebody gets saved in the church, the news will not go beyond the church door. So when you go out and you knock on somebody's door in the community and they give you a cold shoulder, don't think too hard at them, because they perhaps have been influenced by the many, many things that are. You say, well, you're overdoing. No, Christ was despised and rejected of men. In Isaiah chapter 53, in John 15:19, he said, the world loves its own, but since you're not of the world, therefore the world won't love you. So when you go out and you knock on a person's door and they show a bad attitude towards you, don't write them off as a bad person. Remember, they probably influenced by someone, and your continued testimony to them and your good life that you live before them, the devil can show them that's not right. That's not the way it really is. So just keep that in mind. Now let's get to Ruth quickly. Naomi said, go back. Your opportunities are back in Moab. They're not in Israel. Ruth in verse 16 said, entreat me not to leave thee or to return from following after thee, for whither thou goest, I will go. Where thou lodgest, I will lodge. Thy people shall be my people, and thy God my God. Where thou diest, will I die, and there will I be buried. Why? The Lord do so to me, and more also, if aught but death part me and thee. When she saw that she was steadfastly minded to go with her, then she left speaking unto her. What do you have there? You've got childlike faith. Faith in, not Naomi. Faith not in, am I going to find a husband? Faith not in what job awaits me, but faith God can take care of me. Going over to chapter 2 and verse 12 to reinforce this statement. The Lord recompense thy work, and a full reward be given unto thee of the Lord God of Israel, under whose wings thou art come to trust. She went back to Israel because she had her trust in God. Now, faith in God eliminated all the other things in her thinking. It eliminated her fears. It eliminated her, the things that she had heard. Somehow she knew God was bigger than all of it, and therefore he would give her the right outcome. She also said, thy people shall be my people. You know, that's very consistent with being saved. When you love God, you love God's children. 1 John chapter 5 and verse 1 says, thy people shall be my people. You notice the evidence of her faith. Verse 15 says, Naomi had talked about the gods that were in Moab. Ruth didn't want anything to do with them anymore. She was turning her back upon the gods of Moab. She was looking unto the Lord, like Paul said of the people of Thessalonica in 1 Thessalonians 1, 9, and 10. He said, you turn from idols to serve the living God. That's where Ruth is at now. I don't want those gods. I want the living God, the God of Israel. And Naomi's advice in verse 8 and 9, go back home. You know, there you can find you another husband. You can start your life over again. That was backslidden advice. The advice of a backslider. She was not thrown aside by that at all. And then in verse 13, Naomi talked about that the hand of the Lord had been heavy against her. She was not looking at the failures, the faults, and the negativism of somebody else. She knew her life would be developed between her and God. So it didn't matter how negative Naomi was. It didn't matter her wrong advice. The 18th verse says she was steadfastly minded. Now, I have to say this. Faith makes a person an overcomer. When you're exercising your faith, if somebody says something off color to you, that doesn't turn you away from God. And the failures of other people, that doesn't turn you away from God. When your faith is in God. But when people are letting what other people do control them, that means their faith is not where it should be. It's looking at man rather than looking at God. So steadfastly minded, she knew the Lord. What other people did not change her opinion of him at all. Ruth's faith was a rebuke to Naomi's negative thinking. Certainly it was. Because Naomi had to stop. Naomi said, go back. And Ruth said, I'm not going back. So that was a rebuke to her faithless thinking. So you have two lives being contrasted in this chapter. Naomi's broken life speaks of broken vows and self-will. Ruth's experience, as we go forward in the book, speaks of childlike faith in God and how that God is able to bring the abundant life that Christ said, I am come that you might have life, you might have it more abundantly. And Ruth went back with nothing but, I'm trusting in God. She didn't have a book of promises that if you go back to Israel, you'll get this much money, you'll have a husband, you'll have this many acres. She went back on, I'm trusting in God. God is my hope. God is my trust. He's my expectation. God knows and responds to what he sees in our heart. Whether our heart is upon him in trust and full expectation, or whether we feel straitened with his will and our affections become alienated from him. You know, we know what's going on and we know what's happening, whether or not that we're really on the confidence side of trust in God and we have affections for God and the things of God, or whether it's just being down and cold and indifferent. So real trust in the Lord knows that the Lord is able. Jesus never fails. We have to renew our thinking about all of this, and this is why we have to continue to study the Word of God and to pray, because that's where we get a refreshing view of how great God is to those that trust in him. Circumstances will pressure you. Circumstances will do like it did unto Peter and push you down. But we need to overcome that by a lot of prayer and a lot of personal time in our thinking with God's word. So where is Ruth? I need no other argument. I need no other argument. The Lord is my God. The Lord is able. Jesus never fails. God is my all in all. And no matter what condition I'm in, I don't have a thing. I don't even have a pencil in Israel. But I'm going to go back there because I believe that God will take care of me. And that God will be the one to exalt my life in the manner that it should be exalted. Well, that's the pure faith. And of course, the devil wants to make that sour for us, but we've got to maintain that. And of course, God will be there. He permits us to go through the trials, but he promises he will not put too much on us that we cannot bear it as we remain steadfast with him.